The Truth News Network. The greatest country on earth in shambles. Bill Gates already mapping out the next pandemic. The medical profession by law prevented from telling patients the truth. How do we survive this? Well, we the people stand up and stop taking it. We win at the ballot box. And we do that by getting the truth out into public ears. TNN. The Truth News Network. And your warrior at the gate is Dan Newman.
Well, good morning, Dan. Well, first of all, these so-called representatives called Matt Taibbi a so-called journalist, which was laughable on its face, considering he's several books published, an award-winning journalist of, four decades at least?
Yes.
And to call him a so-called journalist is pretty amazing. I would be okay if they called me a so-called journalist, you know.
I would immediately jump up and defend you. I would not let that
well,
go.
Thank you, Dan.
I can't tell you.
We have late breaking news. I don't know if you've seen it because you've been on the air, but I mean, I'm talking about just less than 20 minutes ago. Well, 19 minutes ago, it was published by CNBC that Moody's, one of the big three rating services, you know, financial institution rating services, and this is the quote from Moody's, just hit minutes ago. We have changed to negative from stable our outlook on the U.S. banking system to reflect the rapid deterioration in the operating environment following deposit runs at Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate Bank, and Signature Bank, and the failure of SVB and SNY, Moody's said in the report. And that's brand new. They just updated their outlook from stable to negative.
You know what when you give me that information, I immediately default to this. Moody's, they make their money by doing what you're talking mm-hmm. about, and they're supposed to be the impartial arbiters of news about the capability of banks and other types of financial institutions to work, and they go in and they look at them, and they come up with and let the people know, is this place a good place to do business, or is there a problem there? And all of a sudden, you know, 3 days after SVB goes tits up, bam, Moody's comes out and says, after the fact, hey, our banking system may be in trouble. I think it was pretty obvious when SVB and the other one, Signature Bank, just happened to go down on Friday of last week. And now we've got two or three other banks that are in the sights of being called the same thing. How does this just slip by, this information? You know, this stuff didn't just happen overnight. It's been developing for months and months, if not years.
Well, it didn't happen overnight. It happened with the beginning of the mortgage industry collapse, or the bubble burst, let's call it, or as they like to refer to it, in 2008, and the great bailout then that took place. And there were a whole bunch of us, particularly those on my more libertarian side of the economic tea leaves side, who were at that time saying, okay, it's fine. You're going to put a temporary Band-Aid on this thing that's going to have to be pulled off again, whether it's going to be 5, 10, 15 years later. We're at the, you know, roughly the 15-year mark right now. And it's going to be worse the second time because you can't hide your deficiencies and your bad policy making and your, what do they like to refer to those questionable loans as? I'm missing the word right now in my head.
Junk.
You know what I'm talking about.
Junk.
Yeah. You can't continue operating that way, because when we do that, man, it all goes back to this woke feel-good nonsense. Bankers don't want to issue bad loans. This is not what they're in the business to do, but they are forced to do so because the political powers that are regulating them and telling them what they can and cannot do in the marketplace, because it's not a free marketplace, they're yielding to that and then suffering the consequences of it 10, 15 years later in a ever tightening cycle, by the way. And the problem with that is that it can't continue to go on. You know, somebody asked me yesterday, says, what's going to happen here? And, you know, I flippantly said, I'm just hoping they all fail before the first of the month, you know, cause that way I won't have to pay my bills. And, you know, I've got over a year worth of food set aside, and I've got enough ammo to ensure that I have, you know, food for at least another year, if you know what I'm saying. and so this nonsense of us not, we this facade that we have a free market system is long gone. And now it's just managing crisis after crisis after crisis until they finally lead us where they want us to go. And I'm sorry, but I am not stepping into conspiracy theory here, folks. Remember that there's conspiracy theory, and then there's conspiracy fact. And the conspiracy fact of the moment is that we are being manipulated slowly but surely towards that cashless society, because we don't need a bank run if we don't need cash, right? There's no reason to run on the bank. If you have a crisis that's big enough for government to have to step in and bail us out and then bail us out and then bail us out and bail us out again, then eventually, if you're smart and you have ears to hear and eyes to see, you realize that they're creating the crises so that they can finally narrow everything down to where there's only one solution and one solution only, and that is them. And then our independence is gone.
Yeah.
Our individuality is gone. Our liberty is gone. Our freedom is gone. And the American experiment is gone. And you think that I just jumped right to the end here right now, Dan? I am like, I'm on fire about this stuff right now. And it's not because I don't have, you know, it's not like I don't have a little bit of history and a little bit of experiment in this kind of, you know, great consolidation that I think we're seeing in the banking industry. You know, these bank collapses that they're going to manage, and they're going to bail out the depositors, first of all, and make everybody feel good about it. And then they're going to bail out the businesses that have their accounts there and their loans there. And then they're going to slowly, you know, bail out. And they say that in this particular round that they're not bailing out the management or the shareholders. But let me tell you, that's smoke and mirrors too, by the way. And we know that, because that's the first one to get the bailouts, because those are the ones who have been promised that if they give out these junk loans, that they're going to be taken care of. So you can't believe anybody, especially not our president, when they tell us that they're only going to bail out the depositors, the companies and the investors, but they're not going to bail out the shareholders and the manager.
So we got a little respite this morning, and there was a big bounce on the market. Stocks for banks, mm-hmm. they just zoomed up. On the good news, Joe Biden said yesterday, hey, we've got it taken care of. We have the FDIC, and we have this thing called DIF, because that's going to take care of it, and everything's going to be okay. I got a little text from a good friend of mine that is in the government financial sector. I don't want to say which branch that he is with. And it's pretty telling. Listen to this. There is more than $22 trillion in the U.S. banking system. Deposits across in every kind of bank, mortgage company, whatever, in cash. $22 trillion is in the system. The FDIC, which is our protection, you know, for all of our deposits, they have, as of this morning, a whopping $124.5 billion. And then they have, in addition, oh, this is a great one, a $100 billion line of credit from the U.S. Treasury. So when you roll all those numbers together, the FDIC, with its assets, including this DIF reserve that they told us about this morning, and that it was on that news that the financial business is so positive this morning. We've got this DIF reserve out there. You add it all together, the FDIC's actual money, They borrow another $100 billion from the U.S. Treasury. And of course, what do they have to give for that? They'll just print up a few Treasury bonds. You add it all together, and it only covers 1.26% of deposits.
1.26%. That's just the deposits.
I know.
These banks have made loans based on the fractional reserve banking theory and concept that they operate off of, that are 10 times what they have in reserve themselves anyway. This is, you talk about a bubble. I mean, this is just a pea shoot of a weather balloon for, you know, one of Biden's F-16s to go up and shoot down right now and send the whole thing crashing down. It is literally a setup. And I mean that. And I don't want to drag us back into talking about conspiracy again, but this is exactly what it is. What they want to do to us right now, Dan, is they want to see the elimination of these local banks, of these independent banks, of these community banks. They want to draw us down into, again, what I call the great consolidation, probably down to like three or four banks. We're going to have, you know, Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, maybe one other. And then, of course, all of those will then be completely and totally run by the Federal Reserve. I saw a picture of this. I actually lived and worked in it 40 years ago, Dan. I was in England with a band. I was traveling. I was not the road manager, but I was the band's road bookkeeper. So I was the guy that held the money purse. And so we had an account in England, and it was with Barclays, if I remember correctly, Barclays Bank. And one of the things that I found so odd 40 years ago was that I didn't have to go to a Barclays to make a deposit of what we made at the show the previous night. I didn't have to go to Barclays to buy traveler's checks or to get cash for the band's per diems. I could go to Bank of Scotland. I could go to Lloyd's. I could go to RBC. I could go to HSBC. I could go to any bank in England and make my deposits and make my withdrawals and perform financial transactions, even though my account was at Barclays. And why do you think that is? Is it was all just a centralized one banking system anyway,
yeah,
with a bunch of facade names up over the top.
Yeah.
And that's what they're drawing us down to right now.
I bank totally with Wells Fargo. I have for years. And the reason I do that is I do from time to time some international stuff. And as you said, if you've got a bank, an international bank, like the big ones you mentioned, mm-hmm, Wells Fargo is out there. It's a worldwide bank. You can use Wells Fargo and go to a Wells Fargo bank in pretty much any developed country on the planet. And I do that. But then I find out, guess who owns Wells Fargo? You have any idea?
Who is that? No, well, I don't. Well, I have an account there.
They tried to come to the U.S., and buy all of Wells Fargo about 10 years ago, they being China.
Yeah.
And the Obama administration said, no, 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 no way. You can't do that. We can't have the Chinese owning a big bank that's so prevalent across the U.S. We just can't do it. So guess what they did? There's a holding company that owns controlling interest in the stock of Wells Fargo.
Of course.
The Chinese went and bought the holding company.
Right. There you go.
How much of this kind of stuff do we not know about? And the only reason I know about it was I was overseas doing some work at the time, accessing my accounts, and that just happened to come up. If we knew everything that is under the skin of this whole operation, I guarantee you none of us would sleep tonight.
No, we wouldn't. And everyone always asks for us, you and I, and those like you and I, to give solutions and start stop talking about how bad it is and stop talking about the gloom and the doom and the end time scenarios that are scaring the bejesus out of everybody. And the bottom line is that we do have to talk about that. And I have a real, as I said earlier, my inherent libertarianism interferes sometimes with my own sense of grace and compassion towards those types of depositors that have more than $250,000 in the bank and they haven't spread their risk out across either multiple banks or other financial instruments, you know, because first of all, let's talk about that. If they've got that kind of money, why aren't they smart enough to hedge their bets, so to speak, and spread out their risk? That bothers me that they don't do that. But then, as you just mentioned earlier, when you face the reality that the reserves available in that so-called federal insurance program of our deposits only can cover about 1.5% in total anyway, that means then, well, that we're all at risk, whether we have $250,000 or $25 in the bank.
Absolutely.
We're all at risk of losing every one of it. And so we have to prepare in other ways. And to be perfectly honest with you, Dan, you know, and this is one of the reasons why I have very little compassion for people that don't accept their own risk, is I have been a 100% self-employed individual since the day I graduated from high school. You know, I've had jobs where I worked for businesses, but they're always 1099 jobs. I haven't had a W-2 wage earner job since I was 18 years old. And in that sense, as a result of that, is when COVID came to town and they locked everything down, people like me, you know how much of a bailout we got in COVID?
Oh, you got nothing.
We got nothing. Nothing. And so what my response to that awakening was, is I went, okay, I always thought that I would be one of those guys that was prepared, with, you know, some people call them preppers, whatever. But when I got back to work again, the first thing I started doing was figuring out, what do I need here in my home, in my closet, in my storage rooms, for the inevitability or the eventuality that we need to get by without money for a period of time. And so I started collecting those things and started prioritizing on those things. So if people want solutions about what we're looking at right now, keep it simple and go get some food for your family and begin doing that now, if you haven't already started that process, because we need to start looking at the things that are going to ultimately be put in our laps. And because one of the things is going to happen, Dan, we're either going to have an economic collapse in which, you know, we're looking at a period of time of absolute chaos, or we're going to have a managed decline into total dependence and servitude upon the government anyway. And then it won't matter whether you have money or not. It just won't matter. And so it's best to all of us prepare with those things that we need, not the things that we want, things that we can trade, things that we can barter with our neighbors for. And that's what we have to start looking at. And I don't think it's too late right now. I don't think we're on the precipice tomorrow or, you know, today even, of this happening. But I think we're looking at the first signs of what I think is going to be a managed decline.
We took some steps several years ago. It may have been during COVID, maybe before COVID, but we came to a similar conclusion as did you. And it's just the two of us. And so we went and we went to one of the companies, the emergency companies that they put together stuff you're talking about. And we have, underneath one of the beds in our home, we have stashed enough food in those emergency status things where all you do is add water and cook it and all that kind of stuff to last us for 6 months, the two of us. And of course that doesn't do anything about safe drinking water or anything like that. But we see a scenario, and you don't have to go far down the road of thinking anymore. See a scenario where everything that we just take for granted now, transportation, utilities, all of those kind of things and everything else that we can't even, in the time we have together, come up with and label, all of those things, some of those things could be gone overnight. What would we do? How would we survive? It's going to change everyone's priorities if and when it happens. And you brought up a valid point. It could be a slow decline, or it could be one where it's just bam and it's over. And we're gonna have to deal with it. We see places around the globe that we, as Americans, we send stuff to after the fact in situations just like we're talking about might happen to us. And we can name them. It's not necessary. But we could see a scenario where the dollars you have in the bank, the silver, the 1 ounce silver bars, I mentioned that. I bought silver. I own silver. I bought silver bars, the first ones that I bought years ago. I ordered them and it came with a little device that would cut a 1 ounce silver bar into four little pieces. Mm. And that way you could go into Kroger's or Brookshire's and buy some groceries and you don't have cash. The bank's failed. Well, they'll just take one or two of three of those little pieces of silver. That would only work if the grocery stores have food to sell. I mean, you could take this all the way down the line to using the restroom, toilet paper. I mean, it's crazy how this could all turn upside down in a day or two. We could be right there or close to it.
I actually got a message from somebody in Shreveport yesterday who was scared because she went to her bank, AT&T, or ATM last night, and it didn't work. It was actually powered off. And she texted me and says, is this a sign? Is this it? Is it happening now? I said, I don't know. I mean, I've over, my years experienced a few ATMs that didn't work just out of coincidence. Yeah. But, when you're dealing with the news cycle that we're in right now, and then you go put your card in the machine and it doesn't work, then you kind of go and take a big, deep breath and a gulp, probably.
We're going to have Dunstan Tao on the show on Thursday. He's the crypto guru that has come into my life. He's the largest holder on the planet of Bitcoin. And he told us here about, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I asked him on the air. I said, you're a strong believer in crypto. And of course, he said, yes. He's been there from the very beginning of Bitcoin. And I said, as me, a layman, just a guy, a family guy, how do you see and what would you recommend for us to do regarding how much money do we put in crypto? How much money do we keep in fiat currency? What do you suggest? And he said, I suggest that everybody do this. Get to a point where you just need to keep 20% of the money that comes into your house every month, and that you take the 80% and you put it in cryptocurrency. Don't use a crypto exchange. That's the ones that are getting in a lot of trouble. Bankman-Fried, he was one of those. FTX was an exchange. It wasn't where you go buy cryptocurrency, you buy it through an exchange. But when you do transactions in crypto before you do, you don't have an account, you have what they call a wallet. And so when you buy crypto, you put it in your wallet and nobody can touch it unless you let it happen. So he said 80-20. And so I'm thinking yesterday when all of this began to come down, I have cryptocurrency, I have a wallet. Actually have two of them. And my thoughts are, would it really matter if we don't have any power anymore? We don't have internet anymore. How would I access my wallet? So it really doesn't matter how much you got there. We're talking about finding ways to live off the land again.
And we see that the government now is actually ordering and compensating these big energy companies for the actual destruction of their energy plants. And so I think that your question is very valid. If they're dismantling our energy plants, and paying them something like 150% over what their normal profits would be if they continued to run them, if you will just shut them down. This is happening in our country, Dan. And if they're doing that, where are we going to get all of this wonderful electricity out of the walls to power all of these wonderful electric cars that we see now broken down on the side of the road and they're being recharged by gasoline generators? So I have my doubts about the value of transferring any of my money into crypto.
I'm there reason. With you. I have some there because I did some transactions that required it. And I was locked down. Our computer system at my company was locked down a few years ago by those Russian hackers. And that was my first introduction to crypto. And I bought Bitcoin. And, you know, I learned a little bit about it. But if you can't get juice, if you can't get electricity, there's no way to transact or even communicate electronically. That's going to change a lot of things. Well, let's leave this place of gloom and doom. We've painted the picture. We're both Christians. I told people earlier, the one thing I can tell you need to absolutely do is pray. Pray for peace is what I told them. And with peace would come, obviously, some answers that we're all looking for. I want to switch gears. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, I want you to give us your thoughts about the new information about the Biden Family Syndicate. And I can't wait. Get loaded up. You're up next.
Welcome to McDonald's. May I take your order?
Hi, can I get a... Can I get a...
Okay, get into McDonald's.
Ooh, can I get a... Can I get a...
Yeah, can I get a...
Go, Bubba, go!
Pick me! No, pick me!
Hey, can I get a...
10-piece chicken McNuggets.
And what sauce would you like with that?
Northern Tool and Equipment.
My girlfriend has given me a pet name.
I'm afraid to ask.
Snuggle Muffin.
No, it isn't.
And she uses it in public.
Okay, so give your girlfriend a pet name she'll hate, like Thunder Chunky.
I couldn't do that.
I see. Too harsh for Snuggle Muffin. Okay. Drown her out with a 200-mile-per-hour cordless leaf blower.
Got it. Here she comes.
Hey, Snuggle Muffin.
What are you doing, Snuggle?
Snuggle!
I am so out of here.
Wait, come back, Thunder Chunky.
There's no problem a little horsepower can't solve. Northern Tool and Equipment.
I'm Chad Hall, and I'm here with the first ever Silverado ZR2. This is probably the first time you've seen this truck, but I've been racing the prototype version for over a year. We just inspired this pre-production truck you see behind me. Let's go see what it'll do. Copy. It's got phenomenal power, acceleration, good ground clearance, skid protection, and you've got the Multimatic PSSV shocks, so it's just going to be that much more of a fun truck.
You want to go faster, go for it.
Copy. It's an amazing truck. You're going to want to get your hands on one.
Just another Tuesday, kind of a ho-hum day, nothing happening here at TNN Live. Steve Baker and I, for the last 28 minutes, we've just been shooting the breeze, not talking about anything very important. And I just told Steve during the break, I watched the numbers of the show. There are a lot of people that I guess, hey, these prophets of doom are on the air. You need to dial in to listen to TNN Live. Baker and Newman are going nuts. People are looking for answers, Steve, looking for answers. And at this point, regarding that, there's not a whole lot else we can tell them other than stay tuned. Every bit of news, good or bad, that we get, we're going to share it as it comes to us. And I've been watching the markets this morning real quickly. Let me do an update. The Dow's still up big, 455. The NASDAQ up 263. S&P plus 78. Apple stock mm-hmm. up $2.50, as is Google. So confidence, at least, is strong this morning. And I guess it's because they haven't heard that news that I gave you just a minute ago of the $22 trillion. Uncle Sam's only going to take care of max of 1.26%. So our money on deposit, even if we have less than 250 grand, it's in danger. Everybody is. So let's switch gears now and talk about something positive. You want to do that?
I'm anxious to hear what's in the news cycle right now that we can talk about positively.
Well, it would just be the truth. We can talk about the truth. You know, all these absolutely years now, we have known that there was something going on about that laptop, Hunter Biden's laptop that came up, and all of the mm-hmm. mysteries about where the Bidens got all their quick money. I mean, think about it. Joe Biden was in the Congress for 50 years. The most he made as a congressman, not counting benefits, but salary, was $170,000 a year. And yet all of a sudden, when he's a vice president, he did make a little more than that, but not much more than that. But all of a sudden, after he leaves office, he not only has one mansion on the water, he's got two other ones. And they're very expensive. And he lives a very, I don't even know how to call it, but he's not living a poor life, and he's not struggling for anything even before he became president. And so we began to find out from personal testimony, Tony Bobulinski, former partner of Hunter Biden, we find out that there's a lot of graft and corruption going on, but nobody's got any facts. But it's changed, we find out. All of a sudden, those suspicious notifications that banks in the U.S. are required to send to the U.S. Treasury when some foreign money in big volumes comes mm-hmm. into the bank to any accounts, mm-hmm. hundreds of those warnings were never passed on about money coming to Hunter Biden and through his various business operations. And we find out now that one of those banks that was doing that, this oversight committee that Representative Comer out of Kentucky is chairman of, some of these banks begin to respond, and they have hard evidence from the banks that show the source of some of this money is China. Oh, my gosh. What do you think?
Imagine that. I just know this, Dan, is that I forget how many years ago it was when, you know, I used to actually get paid cash for a lot of my band concerts. And the promoters or the nightclub owners or whoever would settle up at the end of the night with cash. And for years and years and years, I was able to make deposits without showing my ID. Now, you would think that if you were just giving hard, cold cash to the bank, why do they need your ID? Obviously, they need your ID if you're going to ask them for money and you're going to be withdrawing from an account of some sort. And then those numbers started going down. It was $10,000, and then it was $3,000, and now I think it's $500. I mean, just to put $500 cash in my own account, I still have to show them my ID, and it's because the Department of Homeland Security is supposed to be tracking every single thing. And now, as you know, PayPal and all of these other little, you know, money exchange apps, they have to report transactions to the IRS of $600. But the Biden crime family has been getting by with transfers of millions for years with seeming no obligation to anyone to report those whatsoever. But thankfully, you know, as they say, elections have consequences. And now we have this new committee here, the House Oversight Committee, is now specifically targeting and pointing out and showing, okay, here's those. We actually were getting those suspicious activity reports, and here they are. And there's, what is there, 100, 150 of them now that they're looking at?
I think it's over 200 of them, and that means there is probably are more.
And these are transfers directly to either Hunter or James Biden. And those transfers are for millions of dollars. And of course, as we all know, who the big guy is. And we know from Hunter's laptop that the big guy was profiting from these as well because he was getting his 10%.
And the way we know about it was Hunter was griping online because he was having to take care of his dad. And he didn't like it. He didn't want to do it, as a spoiled son will sometimes do. Let me ask you this. There'll be more and more and more of this that comes out. Here's the big question. Do you think there will be any accountability for any of this?
You know, I think you ask me that almost every week about anything we talk about, if there's going to be accountability. And my answer, I think, is almost always, well, we would hope so, but I don't think so. I think there's a place that you reach, and it's particularly more favorable depending upon what side of the political aisle you're on, where you're basically operating under the assumption that you're immune to any obligation to the law, the responsibility to whatever criminal activity that you've been involved in. So long as you can walk up to the microphones and the cameras and couch it as, hey, we just need to get back to the work of the American people. This is just a distraction. This is just more Russian information. Who do I sound like right now? I sound like everything that's come out of this administration for the last 2 years.
Absolutely.
That's their only answer.
Yeah.
And when you have a compliant media, I wrote an article, completely different subject, just yesterday, where I said these words, and you've heard me say this on your program before. If the New York Times, NPR, NBC don't say it, then it never happened. And because they have that compliant media, or they have essentially this, for lack of a better way of putting it, a cartel of on information directly with the mass media or mainstream media, then they can walk to that microphone and say anything that they want to. And then if they're not challenged by that media cartel, then whatever comes out of their mouth is the truth.
Last night,
they're trying to hide, it didn't happen.
Last night, I was at a soccer function for my three grandchildren that play soccer at this school. And a gentleman who is, if I said his name, you're from Shreveport, you would know it. He's a younger guy. He's a generation behind you and me. He came over to me and pulled me to the side. We actually walked outside and sat there and talked for about 20 minutes. He asked me, he said, why don't people know about what's going on? And I explained it to him as simply as I could. He was very serious, and he's obviously a thinker, and he finds facts, does some of the stuff that we do. And I explained it. I said, look at what's happening with your kids. He's got kids in high school. How do they function? What do they do? Where do they spend their leisure time? And he said, well, it's online, social media. If they get any news, they get it from Apple News that pops up online or something like that. And I said, here's the deal. Our generation, the one behind yours and mine, their generation and the one behind theirs, they've been conditioned that everything they need in the way of information, it's right there in the palm of their hand. And as long as they have Google and they have Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, they can get every bit of information about everything to do with their lives, and they don't need to listen to their peers any longer. And that's a condition that's there, and that's where they go to get it. Let me challenge you, when we get through with the show here in a few minutes, take a couple of minutes and you go and look at those sites that you just mentioned. Go see what comes up at CPAC. Not CPAC. What am I talking about? C-SPAN. Look at what news is on C-SPAN this morning. Or look at what's on the radio channel that we taxpayers pay for across the nation. Any of those sources, go look there. Look at what the New York Times has on the front page this morning, and you'll understand. That's what I told him last night. Look, we don't control the narrative. We put people like you, Steve, and us here. We put stuff out there, but that doesn't mean people are going to go read it or go listen to it. Just because it's out there doesn't seal the deal. People have got to begin to be hungry to find facts, and then when they find them, ask questions to confirm or get them denied, and then take actions on them. And we have at least two generations of Americans that are conditioned that that's not necessary anymore. I'll never forget when that thing came out a few years ago. First time I heard somebody say it, well, you've got your truth and I have mine. And when I heard that, I realized we're in deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
We're in trouble. Buddy.
That is a troubling phrase.
We spent 40 minutes today talking about two topics, and both of them are very serious and both of them are negative. So do you have anything good to say as we leave today? You got anything to be happy about?
I could be trite and I could say all the cliche things about, you know, being thankful for all things. And the reality is that I am more energized in what I'm doing right now than I've ever been in my life, because I feel like that I am working with a team of people who A, want to save the country, and otherwise B, want to pull the whole thing down. And when I say pull it down, I don't mean destroy the country. I mean, pull down the facade, pull down, drain the swamp, as we've said over the last few years, that sort of thing. And so I am genuinely excited to be working with these guys who, this is their mission, and this is for real. And they're right there working in the belly of the beast. And I've got to go back up there tomorrow. And we're talking about DC, of course. And even though it is a cesspool, it is a swamp, it is the portal to hell, as far as I'm concerned, the bottom line is that if we're going to be in the game and we're going to fight, then that's where we have to do it. And that's got me energized. I'm thankful at my age to not just still be in the game, but to be playing the game at a higher level than I've ever been able to play it before. So I would say to those that are listening that's not me just talking about myself, but I'm saying to everyone out there, there's still a lot every one of us can do. And we can do it locally. We can do it at our school boards. We can do it. We can do it in our grocery line if we have to do it there. We have to speak up sometimes in uncomfortable circumstances and uncomfortable situations, but it's time for us to begin letting our voices be heard and not allow this great American experiment to be taken away from us at such an, because it is being yanked from us right now at an ever increasing rate. But we can do something, and we can make changes, and we can continue to push back, and we continue to, and we win small victories every day too, Dan. That is still happening.
Yeah.
We are winning victories. But as I said, if the New York Times, NBC, and NPR don't tell us about it, then it never happened.
Well, thank you so much again for sharing your wisdom with us. And it's kind of good when we can put our two noggins together and come up with some facts for people. And again, that's what we do. If you have any questions and want to reach out to Steve, how do they do that, Steve?
I prefer you go to our Locals community. Locals, of course, is one of those blog communities like a Substack or something like that. And it is continuing to grow. It's growing leaps and bounds. Now that, Scott Adams has been deplatformed, he's brought his entire Dilbert cartoon over there. In fact, he's no longer censored. So Dilbert will now be completely uncensored on Locals. And of course, Glenn Greenwald just brought his empire over there just a month or so ago.
Yeah.
And then my little micro empire is there. So it's the pragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com, thepragmaticconstitutionalist.locals.com. Or if you just you can't remember all of that, it's tpc4usa.com. You can just type that in, TPC, the number 4, USA, and it'll take you right there.
Thank you, buddy, again. You're one of my heroes, and I appreciate you sharing with us every week. Keep us posted on any stuff you get, good or bad. We're fact finders. Let's get all the facts that we can and get them out to our people.
Will do.
Steve Baker again, every Tuesday here at TNN Live, our second hour, 10 to 11 in Central Time Zone. And we're very thankful for the information that he brings.
Real Truth, Real News, TNN, the Truth News Network.